Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana Elbay, and today we got some very, very important information to relate to you in regards to the food that we eat. We're going to be talking about a company called Monsanto's. Later on in the broadcast, we got an expert by the name of Jeffrey Smith that did a very powerful interview on a late-night talk show, and I thought it was very important that this information be relayed to the Moors as well. The director of the Institute of Responsible Technology and the leading spokesperson on the health dangers of genetically modified foods, Jeffrey Smith, discusses evidence that GMO foods are contributing to health problems in those who consume them. Crops such as corn, soybean, cotton, and sugar beets are now primarily genetically modified, and a lot of the corn and soybean in particular goes into animal feed. The American Academy of Environmental Medicine reviewed studies of lab animals being fed GM foods and reported that the diet was causing problems with their immune, reproductive, and gastrointestinal systems, contributing to organ damage, and they were aging faster. Smith reported, we see similar categories improving in pets and livestock when they get off GMOs. But for humans that are increasingly eating such foods, these kinds of problems are on the rise. We're going to deal with that this evening, but we're going to start off with a brother that I'm quite fond of that has given us some very, very important information in the past. We're going to bring him on. And now, before I do, the first thing I want to mention to you is the fact that we have this information inside of Tahaka's library. In order to access that, you simply contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we can get you in there. If you are having problems with your mortgage, if you're having problems with bill collectors, banks, if the police are hassling you, if you got loved ones in prison or whatever it is, what we have did is assemble tools and put these tools in this library as remedies that you can actually use to solve your problems. And you simply contact me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we get you in there. You can go and listen to previous broadcasts. I'll place the link up for those who are in the chat room. And you can ask for my free articles, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game, and we're going to make that a little easier for you. Later on, we're going to give you an email to send your request to, and all you have to do is just say, Tahaka, send me those free articles you mentioned, and I'll get that information to you, okay? And without further ado, we're going to go directly
into the story, Michael.
Well, that's right, Harold. He's an immigrant from Honduras who never went to school, college, or medical school. Yet the man known as Dr. Sabi claims to have found the cure for several life-threatening diseases, including AIDS. Too good to be true? Well, you be the judge. The lump in Myrtle Rick's left breast is gone.
I haven't had any symptoms or problems or anything.
Sabrina Peterson's son no longer disabled by sickle cell anemia.
He has a lot of energy. I have to make him rest.
Disease is cured by this man. His name is Dr. Sabi, but you won't find a medical degree hanging from his wall. Instead, a certificate of healing.
We have complex things with science, but if we go back to God and use the herbs as God said, then you can see how simple it is.
Dr. Sabi believes what ails you can be cured with natural alkaline herbs and a vegetarian diet solely made up of what he called electric foods, mushrooms, greens, and rye breads without starch.
Hippocrates established the principle of medical science by using herbs to cure diseases, then why the physician using the chemicals?
40 years ago, a doctor in Mexico cured Sabi of diabetes, asthma, and obesity with the very same herbs and diet he dispenses to all of his patients, whether they're suffering from lack of energy or full-blown AIDS.
That package is an intracellular chelation. I'm removing plaque from the system. I'm removing inflammation. That is the base for all disease.
And according to a medical affidavit provided by Dr. Sabi, it's working. It shows a patient diagnosed with HIV in November of 1993 was cured 2 months later. Thousands of patients worldwide swear by his methods and natural herbal medicines.
In the tiny village, Lisa sought guidance for body and soul from an herbal guru named Dr. Sabi.
Dr. Sabi, you know, according to him, can cure anything. Everything from trying to lose weight to, you know, looking for a cure for AIDS. People go there with hopes and dreams that Dr. Sabi can somehow save them.
She had been through so many intense problems in her career and in her life and in her personal life that she didn't know where to turn. And this doctor, she said, had shown her how to really open up and cleanse all of the negativity out of her.
She told me she was suffering with alcoholism and that she was smoking excessively, cigarettes, drinking and smoking. She asked me, what do I need to do to stay on the side of peace? I said, fast, do what Jesus did. She said, what did Jesus do? He fasted for 40 days and 40 nights.
Midway through her 40-day ordeal, an obviously gaunt Lisa spoke with MTV News.
I've been polluting my body for 30 years. 40 days is not a long time to me to fast. 40 days represents overcoming death. It's the number of days that Jesus fasted for, and I kind of feel like I'm on a journey sometimes. Don't really know quite where I'm headed.
At the ending of the fasting, she came to me. I heard the door opening at 2 o'clock in the morning. She said, I completed my fast this morning. I said, what did you see? I saw God. She said, I'm going to make you famous. I said, how? Because I'm going to talk about you. Does everyone know you cure AIDS and cancer?
There's just a lot of people in the world who are suffering. They're sick. They're not happy. They're looking for answers. They don't know where to turn. Well, I know a man who's been curing AIDS since 1987. This guy has taught me a lot, and I need to share my knowledge, you know, with the world.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. That's Dr.
The
Sabi.
Amsterdam News and the New York Post, that AIDS has been cured by the Usher Research Institute. And we specialize in cures for sickle cell, lupus, herpes, blindness, cancer, insanity, impotence, and others. When the Attorney General saw this ad, he could not, under any circumstances, accept that this ad was representing something that was accomplished. According to him, this could not be true. But what the Attorney General of New York didn't know about those of us who are members of the OSHA Research Institute is that we were aware that until that day of September of 1985, we were aware that until that day, September of 1985, there's no record. There are no records showing that someone somewhere on this planet had cured these diseases that before mentioned. So how could the Attorney General, Mr. Robert Abrams of New York, could have believed that this was possible? Now, it became a thing of confrontation, which was unnecessary. We said that this is the reconnection. But in the reconnection, we find carbon that we have yet to understand or to study carbon. We are told that melanin is what makes pigmentation the color that it is. We have been fed melanin, like we have been fed protein, like we have been fed vitamins and enzymes. These are words that we have yet to dissect and to understand the meaning and their function. Well, in the reconnection, we find that carbon is the determining factor in reference to life. The higher the concentration of carbon, the higher the quality of life. When carbon is absent, life is also absent. Biochemistry supports our position. Biochemistry shows that carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, three combined, has to be present for life to exist. But instead of us learning about the function of carbon and iron, we've been fed vitamins, protein, enzymes, and melanin. But when the question is asked about these particular substances, that is very important, one of the most important questions that should be asked, are they electrical? People seem to think that this question should not have been asked, shouldn't have been asked. Is it electrical? Well, science shows us that that question should be asked. Why? Because the human body is electrical. And any substance that would assimilate and render the good or nutrition that we are searching and pursuing, that substance must necessarily be electrical. And then, if it is electrical, it will have a definite amount of electrons per atom, separating one element or mineral from the other. You see, in nature, everything lives by its own kind, with its own kind. Remember, we talk about chemical affinity. So when we reconnect, we find that carbon is the determining factor. So this talk is the carbon papers. Science shows that without carbon, life is very, very poor or non-existent. And this is where the compounds of the OSHA Research Institute comes into play. we carefully selected from the forest plants that are the highest in electrical vibration. And ladies and gentlemen, we said that God begins and ends with everything. This forces us and compels us to go to the Holy Bible. The Holy Bible teaches us in the book of Genesis that the herbs are for the healing of the nations. The book of Ezekiel 47:12 repeats, the herbs are for the healing of the nations. We again go to the last book in the Holy Bible. The herbs are for the healing of the nations. So, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, God shows us in the first book, in the middle book, and in the last book, just in case that we overlook one, we will get it in the other. And if we miss the other, we get it in the last. So, shouldn't the question be asked, if are we willingly neglecting God and disobeying the mandate of God? Are we doing that willfully, knowing that this is one of the greatest violations? We talk about being obedient. Of course, it is obedience that gets us the thing from the Almighty that we so desire. But how many of us are obedient to that dictate? Very few of us. I hope that I'm one of them. It says in the Bible that the herbs are for the healing of the nations. Should we go back into history a little bit and revisit Mr. Hippocrates, the father of medicine? We're not going to mention Imhotep I because there's a problem with Imhotep. The reason why we say that there's a problem with Imhotep I is because he was the first to open the human body. If the human body was made to be open, it would have a zip on it. It doesn't have a zip on it. It was not made to be open. But we are going to overlook Mr. Imhotep I from Egypt in the first dynasty. We're going to skip over this man and we're going to go to Hippocrates. And maybe Hippocrates would shed light on what we are now expounding on. Hippocrates lived 365 years before Christ was born. This man cured every disease known to man. Hippocrates did. Long before Jesus was born, he was healing every disease. So when we say that only Jesus heals, no, we should say that only God healed, because Hippocrates was here 300 years before Christ was born.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we got some very, very important key information delivered to us just then. Number one, the ancient African records of what we're calling our Bible clearly states that the herbs are for the healing of the nations. So what that means is when you have an ailment, there's a corresponding herb for its cure. The medical profession today is not in the business of curing. There's no money there. If you came to me and I was a doctor and I cured you, then there would be no need for you to come back. There's no way that I can live in this big, fabulous lifestyle, have the $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 home, be a member of the golf club and all these things. if I'm curing people, because there's no repeat business. So what I have to do in order for me to live this lifestyle is I have to treat your illness. I get out of the curing business and treat your illness. Now, keep in mind that all of this information that we have here is already in Tahaka's library. And there's tons and tons of other information. We got information on Dr. Alayala Africa. He's there as well. If you got problems with diabetes, if you got high blood pressure, tumors, it doesn't matter what you have. There's corresponding cures on the planet for that. But most of us have been programmed to believe that if we got ailment, the first place we need to go is to the doctor. And, of course, when you go to the communities that these doctors live in, you notice that they're living a much more exorbitant lifestyle than you. And the reason is that they are know something about business that you haven't considered. The cure for your illness has already been given to you. Information on how to cure yourself has already been given to you. And of course, a lot of us, we fail to realize that. And if certain individuals don't say it, if the doctor didn't say it, then, of course, it can't possibly be true. But before we go on to the next section, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick break, and everybody stay right where you're at because we're going to go directly into the main frame of this broadcast, okay?
One cup of coffee. come up and this is no junior gang. Telling every woman praying on for them and I say love him, give him something strong. Make him the better, you make him belong. Love him to the last for long.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back, and we're going to make mention of the fact one more time that we're offering our free articles, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game, and the way to access that, along with the Authors Library, is simply contacting me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It will get you in there. We're going to go directly into problems that we are experiencing in America, and keep in mind that these particular products are in your grocery store, and you need to be aware of how to deal with the situation, what to look out for, and all this stuff. So we're going to lay it out for you here this evening, and so pay very close attention, and you might want to get a paper and pencil and write this stuff down.
Well, next time you go to the food store, look around. Are you picking up genetically modified foods? Because it seems to be everywhere. In a moment, we'll be talking with Jeffrey Smith, his new movie, Genetic Roulette. We've got that website linked up before the movie on coasttocoastam.com. Let's talk about GMO foods when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Jeffrey Smith, of course, Executive Director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, leading spokesperson on the health dangers of genetically modified foods. He's a world leader in GMO education, publisher of the Non-GMO Shopping Guide, founder of the Campaign for Healthier Eating in America. Welcome back to Coast, Jeffrey Smith. Jeffrey, always a pleasure. How are you?
Great. Excellent. I'm in California. Just gave a keynote at the Heirloom Expo in Santa Rosa, and I'm ready to go.
Super. And we're going to talk about why you're in California in just a moment. How did you get interested in genetically modified foods? It's not something you wake up in the morning and say, hey, you know what, I'm going to tell the world about this. What happened in your life?
Well, in 1996, a molecular biologist gave a lecture about the health dangers and environmental dangers of GMOs to a small crowd in my town in Iowa. And he was an expert in genetic engineering, was an award-winning scientist, and knew absolutely that the technology was not ready for prime time. He was intimately aware of the fact that there was all sorts of unpredicted side effects and was aware that these side effects were not going to be evaluated before the foods were put on the market, could affect everyone who eats, and the ecology could affect all living organisms, and because you can't recall them once they're released, could influence all future generations. So when I saw this unprecedented exposure of this amazing threat to our health and environment, I realized I needed to help translate his scientific concerns into language that everyone could understand.
Uh-huh.
I've been doing that ever since.
Jeffrey, take us through what science has done with the first genetically modified seed, for example. How did they do this? What did they do? Let's say it was a tomato, for lack of a better crop.
In fact, the first genetically modified food released in the United States was a tomato.
Ah, okay. So you've got these tiny little tomato seeds. What did they do to it?
Well, typically, they used a gene gun. There's two major ways. Either use a gene gun or a bacterial infection. But let's start with the gene gun. You take the gene that you want to insert from some species. So you could take it from bacteria or viruses or humans or animals, whatever. And you make some changes in the genetic code so it works in the plant. You typically add an on switch called a promoter, which comes mostly from a virus. So you're sort of cobbling together pieces of DNA from a variety of kingdoms. Then you multiply the number of genes by the millions and then load your gun with them. You shoot that gun into a plate of millions of plant cells, hoping that some of those genes make it into the DNA of some of those cells.
And stick, basically.
Yes, they sort of end up near the DNA, and then a wound response heals it and integrates it into the DNA, and then you clone those cells into a plant, and now every single cell of that plant contains that new gene construct. Now, the process of insertion plus cloning, irrespective of what gene you put in, causes unpredicted side effects, thousands, even hundreds or thousands of mutations up and down the DNA. Up to 5% of the naturally functioning genes can change their levels of expression. You can have new allergens, higher levels of existing allergens, mm-hmm. new toxins, etc., as part of the process.
And they would then grow these tomato seeds into plants, and hence that tomato in every seed in it would be a genetically modified seed, I guess, right?
Exactly. In fact, when they genetically modify, say, BT corn, which is corn that produces an insecticide, the insecticide is produced in every single cell of the plant.
What would happen if they genetically modified humans at the rate that they've genetically modified plants?
Well, right now you have 94% of the soybeans, 88% of the corn, 94% of the cotton, 95% of the sugar beets. It's overwhelming in this short period of time how many of these crops are genetically engineered. And, you know, we would be seeing such dramatic side effects in health, mood, behavior, abilities. We would realize and gain respect for the fact that we don't really know what's going on.
And I got to tell you, Jeffrey, people are acting weird. People are getting sick. People are having respiratory problems. They're having stomach ache problems. How do we know it's not directly attributed to this?
That's one of the things that I explore in the movie Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives. We track a certain category of things that are going wrong, or several categories, in the lab animals. So when the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, for example, reviewed the peer-reviewed published studies, they said, this is messing up the animal's immune system, their reproductive system, their gastrointestinal system. It's causing organ damage. They're aging faster, and insulin and cholesterol regulation has gone haywire. So these were the categories that they said are clearly affected in the lab animals. Now, we'll talk about it as we go through this evening, we see the similar categories improving in pets and livestock when they get off of GMOs, improving in humans when they get off GMOs, and these same categories of diseases and disorders are on the rise in the U.S. population since GMOs were introduced in 1996.
Interesting. Very interesting. And as you know, there are no coincidences, are there?
I agree.
What was the original intent to create GMO foods?
Well, the big player is Monsanto. They own the patents to about 90% of the crops out there and by acreage. And their main thing was to sell more weed killer. So their weed killer Roundup was going off patent in year 2000. And they wanted to have a kind of a de facto extension of their patent. So they created Roundup-ready crops, where if you buy the seeds, which are engineered not to die when sprayed with Roundup, then you had to buy Monsanto's version of the Roundup. And so they maintained dominance in this most popular herbicide in the world. So that's the primary reason.
So it wasn't to increase the bushels of corn or soybeans. Originally, it was this Roundup.
In fact, GM crops don't, on average, increase yield. The soybeans drop yield by 5 to 11%. Canola's down maybe 7.5%. Cotton's all over the place. There's a tiny increase with the GM corn that kills the corn borer because the corn borer can lower yield. But they haven't been able to satisfy many of the myths and promises about higher yield, salt tolerance, real drought tolerance. These are all things that go way beyond their primitive understanding of the DNA and ability to manipulate.
Jeffrey, what was wrong with the, you know, God-given crops, and then you just use your insecticide?
Oh, George, that's what I want to know. In fact, there's a God-given crop that's naturally resistant to the European corn borer, but I guess the problem was it wasn't genetically engineered and patentable, so they did not develop that, which could have outperformed the GMO. They chose this new sexy technology, which gave them patents and ownership and control and the ability to charge more.
And ongoing sales.
Exactly.
I mean,
you're not allowed to save seeds. You sign a contract that you won't save a seed that you buy that's genetically engineered, so they end up having a much higher profit from rather than the farmers that save seeds year after year.
You know, manufacturing has what they call obsolescence. It is the theory of make products that will last, but not last forever, because we want the, you know, the consumer to buy again, whether it's a washing machine or a dryer or a dishwasher or a lawnmower, whatever it is. The kind of things that they made years ago, Jeffrey, they lasted a long time. Heck, I remember my mother had one of the original Maytags, where if you had a tie and it got caught on the inside, it would suck you in, you know, in the rollers, one of those things. I mean, this thing lasted for almost forever. That doesn't happen anymore. A friend of mine went out and bought a brand new washing machine 3 years ago, and already she's got repairmen coming to fix it and replace parts and things like that. I would assume that the theory was, all right, let's make a washing machine that breaks down after 5 years, and they got to buy another new one. But they'll be happy with it. It's disposable. Is that the same theory with this GMO, with the GMO seeds, in that you got to buy them every year?
That's one way in which they're disposable. The other way is that they implode in their effectiveness. There's the Roundup-ready crops, but now the weeds have outsmarted Monsanto. When you have Roundup-ready weeds, and so they have to bring in, now they want to bring in Agent Orange crops.
Oh, my God.
So it's like the bugs are now resistant to the BT toxin, which is supposed to kill the corn root worm, and it's causing all sorts of economic problems. So nature is revolting against GMOs, and so that's another way that they want to just bring another magic bullet in. Let's bring a new GMO in and keep, you know, cycling the farmers onto this treadmill of poisons.
The proponents of GMO seeds and crops would say, look, you know what, I've eaten them, I feel okay, I'm fine, everything's good. How do we address that?
I gave a talk today to a couple of hundred, maybe 300 people in the audience in Santa Rosa, and maybe half of them had already switched to non-GMO food. So I asked them, how many of you, when you switched to non-GMOs, felt better, saw some symptoms go away or improve? And 40 people raised their hands. Then we went through and asked what specific symptoms went away or improved, and it was mental things like fatigue and fogginess. Mm-hmm. It was allergies. There was weight problems from another group. There was basically across the board, I've heard infertility, restless leg syndrome, tons of gastrointestinal problems. And what's interesting is that I interviewed, and this is in the film Genetic Roulette, when I went to interview the doctors who had been prescribing non-GMO diets to patients for years, they were completely unambiguous. They said GMOs cause inflammation. GMOs increase allergic responses among my allergenic patients. GMOs do cause all these things. In fact, one doctor from Chicago said that 100% of her patients get better on non-GMO diets. And so I went to Chicago and interviewed their patients, and it turns out irritable bowel, Crohn's disease, morning fog, weight problems, skin problems, migraine headaches, all found relief when the person switched to non-GMO eating.
That is remarkable. I mean, it is huge. You are in California.
Yes.
You're talking about an urgent project that California is working on. Tell us about Proposition 37.
Well, Prop 37, which will be on the ballot on November 6th, on Election Day, would require, if it passes...
And this is statewide.
This is statewide in California, but it's certainly going to affect every single national brand. They would be required to label their foods genetically engineered if they use genetically modified ingredients. Now, this labeling that's required, or would be required with Prop 37, is enjoyed already by the people of 49 countries, and it's desired by 91% of Americans. Now, this is historic. 19 states have tried through their state legislatures in the past 12 months to require labeling of GMOs.
It didn't work, did it?
No, Monsanto was threatening lawsuits in Vermont and Connecticut, so the governor officially caved to Monsanto.
Lawsuits on what basis?
Well, you know, they're going to claim that it's lack of freedom of speech, that it's interstate commerce problems. And the thing is, we know that they're going to lose the lawsuit, but as the governor of Vermont said, I'm in favor of labeling, but I don't want to burden the people of Vermont with an expensive lawsuit by Monsanto.
I've got to tell you, as a newsman, Jeffrey, a filed lawsuit like that by a company would be the greatest talk show story, because it would tell you exactly that they want to hide things.
I know. But the thing is this, the fortunes of Monsanto are intimately tied in hiding things, because 53% of Americans say they would avoid GMOs if labeled.
If they knew about it, yeah.
So the food companies are already saying that if the labeling law comes to pass, they're going to remove GM ingredients, and that's going to affect Monsanto's bottom line. So they don't have much to lose by that lawsuit infamy if it's compared to losing basically GMOs in the United States.
And a lot of revenue.
Yeah.
So this proposition, does it spell out, if it passes, how the labeling must be done? I mean, is it going to be one of those, you know, where you hear a television commercial about a prescription drug where the guy at the end talks about the possibilities of, you know, danger? You can barely understand it, he says.
You know, if you do this, your hair will fall out, your eyes will fall out, your toes will turn gray.
I mean, you can't understand it. Is it going to be in teeny print where you can't even see it? I mean, or have they spelled out, it's got to be, you know, big, it's got to be here?
It's going to be basically saying made through genetic engineering, or maybe made with through genetic engineering, on a readable panel on the product. And like I said, it starts 18 months after it's passed, so it would start by July 1st, 2014. My hope is that when it passes, that the food companies will all remove GMOs so no one has to label.
Okay, but if they remove GMOs, and as you've told me, there's a huge percentage now of GMO foods and crops out there. Where are they going to get the food in order to still sell?
Excellent question. Most of the GMO crops are used for animal feed. And this particular labeling bill does not require labeling of milk and meat of animals that have been fed GMOs.
Ah.
So we do have sufficient resources in non-GMO seed available in time to plant for the direct food ingredients.
Okay, but they will still pelt the animals.
Yes,
with the GMO foods, and the Passover to us could still be the same, right? In terms of whatever you're feeling because you're eating GMO foods, you still may get it if you are drinking milk or eating meat from an animal that ate it.
Well, the Center for Veterinary Medicine of the FDA did warn their superiors repeatedly that the milk and meat of animals fed GMOs carry unique risks. You know that, of course, toxins can bioaccumulate in an animal, so that you can actually have higher concentrations of toxins in, say, example, the fats of an animal than you have in the food that they're eating. But there's only been one study ever done on the effect of an animal that eats another animal that's eaten GMOs, and that's not yet published.
Well, could you get, though, something out of Proposition 37 that would say, This sirloin that you're about to buy, and it's on the label, was from a cow, a herd of beef that ate genetically modified foods.
It wouldn't be on Prop 37. That's already written, and there's good reason why. Because legally, you're only allowed to have one issue on a ballot initiative, and if it was sued once it passes, they could argue that animals that eat GMOs are not the same thing as genetically modified animals. Now you have two issues in Prop 37, which nullifies the whole thing. So it had to be basically about the main source of GMOs, which is basically the food in grocery stores. Perhaps a future initiative can focus on the milk and meat of animals that have been fed GMOs. But I think this is an excellent first step.
Yeah, you got to take a step.
Yeah, and when the food companies set up a system to deliver the non-GMO soy and corn derivatives, they're going to end up with extra non-GMO animal feed, because that's often part of the same process, and then that'll increase the market availability of non-GMO feed. So some companies, like they do in Europe, are going to start bragging and boasting about using non-GMO feed, which will give a marketing advantage.
Good point.
Et cetera.
And it'll be labeled probably at a supermarket. Let's say you go to buy that steak. Would it possibly say organic or something like that?
Absolutely. In fact, organic means that it's not intentionally using any GMOs, or it could be grass-fed, for example, which until alfalfa came also meant no GMOs, but now that there's alfalfa, you need to have no genetically modified alfalfa as well.
Well, how many states will look at this Proposition 37 if it passes, and do we have any polls
on how it might do?
Well, right now, I think we're polling almost 3-1 in the state. But this is before the big drop of the disinformation. Monsanto and others have gathered $27 million, and they've bought up a ton of advertising time on television, and they haven't yet let it blast, but they're about to confuse voters by saying that labeling GMOs is confusing. They're going to spend more money than they'll ever spend on labeling by trying to convince Californians that labeling is too expensive. They've got self-contradictory arguments, but they're testing them in polls, they're testing them in focus groups to create some kind of emotional rejection response because their life is at stake, so to speak, the biotech industry, because they want to maintain their dominance through secrecy.
Jeffrey, we're coming back. We're talking more with you about genetic roulette on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you know, every Wednesday, a Coast to Coast listener sounds off telling us how they feel about things. You can, too. Send us your submission to this email address, whatyathinkeditorial@aol.com. Include your name and phone number, and we just might get back to you, like we did here.
Hi, this is Don from New York, and this is my sound off. I love my country and all it stands for. Our government is designed to work for the people, to give everyone a fair chance of living the American dream. Lately, these dreams are turning into nightmares. The majority of our politicians are no longer our public servants. They are in it for themselves. We are being ripped off daily and, for the most part, feel we can't do anything about it. We need leaders who will lead by example and show us they are on our side. Live the lives you make for us. If our payer pensions have to be cut, then so should theirs. Stop voting for your own raises. Act like regular people and have your raises based on how well you perform and how you serve the people. Only in politics do the servants end up making more money after retirement than the people they serve. We would feel a lot better about your decisions if you had to follow the same rules that you make for the people. It would be easier to embrace universal health care if you weren't excluded from it. Why should servants be treated like elitists and get the best health care possible while the people they serve have to pay unrealistic medical bills? I feel the average person believes money is what chooses our leaders and runs our government. This is true because we allowed it to happen. When our country is attacked, we unite as one with one purpose, to stand up and do what needs to be done to protect our great country. We the people need to stop feeling helpless against the corrupt politicians who are destroying our country from within. We need to unite again to make our country as great as we want it to be. This is Don from New York. This has been my sound off.
Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Jeffrey Smith with us tonight as we talk about GMO foods. His latest movie, of course, is out, Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives. It's a film. His website, geneticroulettemovie.com. By the way, in a moment, I'm going to tell you about a 24-hour free offer he's giving you. I like that word free, Jeffrey. I do. Let me ask you something. Is it conceivable that if GMOs continue on its path, that all the God-given seeds of natural things will be gone?
That's actually Monsanto's stated goal. Arthur Andersen, the consulting company that revealed how they worked with Monsanto in the end of January 1999 at a conference, said that they asked the executives to describe their ideal future in 15 to 20 years, and they described a world in which 100% of all commercial seeds were genetically engineered and patented. And Andersen Consulting worked backwards from that goal to create the strategy and tactics to achieve it. Now, your question was brilliantly put there, because people don't realize that what happens is our whole nature right now, all the seeds, et cetera, are the result of billions of years of evolution to this point. And that's the way it goes. But if we replace it in this generation, it's lost for all future generations. And, in fact, at the same conference, a biotech company projected a 95% takeover of all commercial seeds within 5 years. Now,
Jeez. It
didn't happen because of a whistleblower. The gag order was lifted in Europe, and we learned about the dangers of GMOs, and there was a tipping point of consumer rejection, so it was forced out of Europe, which stopped Africa from accepting it, and the U.S. started to get a little nervous. So, fortunately, they haven't kept with their timetable. But most every single fruit, vegetable, grain, nut, etc., has been developed genetically engineered and is some level of the pipeline. So whether it's in a laboratory or in a field trial or in a sketch pad somewhere, they really are planning to patent and replace our natural seeds. And now we have genetically modified mosquitoes that have been released in three countries. They want to introduce genetically modified fish and animals. So it's not just fruits, vegetables, et cetera. It's livestock and insects.
I'm going to say this because of full disclosure, Jeffrey. Back around 1983, something like that, Monsanto commissioned a public relations firm that I was working at, great people. And guess who was there helping at the opening of its brand new biotech science center?
Who?
Me.
Oh, baby.
Out there in Chesterfield, Missouri. And I remember the first night we were coming, we were leaving the place, the light from this huge greenhouse that they have there just lit up the sky because it was somewhat cloudy. And I went, oh, my God, look at that. But at that point, back in the 80s, you know, you just think, hey, this is science. They're doing this for the betterment of mankind. I was there. I was right there.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Amazing. I heard a story, an early story of Monsanto, which I'm just going to pass it on because I heard it directly from the person in person. He claims it was repeated in Nova. I haven't done the fact-checking, but it sounds like I want to put this out to your listeners because it's so interesting. He was called to the principal's office in high school around 1976, and there were some men in suits, and they wanted to know what he had read when he hacked into a computer site. He had no idea until then that he had accidentally hacked into the CIA, CIA site.
It's like that Gary McKinnon guy who went fishing, and he's still being held in Britain after he tapped into the Pentagon's computer system.
Yes. So this guy, they asked him over and over again what he saw, and he told him he read that there had been a plan with Monsanto and the CIA to drop termination seeds into developing countries to force famine, which would allow the U.S. to come and provide food in exchange for extracting resources and commitments. And he said he had to sign all these non-disclosures, but then 3 years ago, Nova reported on it, so now it's out. So this is a way that theoretically to use genetic engineering for diabolical purposes.
Yeah, to wipe out other crops.
And we know that the tobacco companies used it diabolically to create more addictive nicotine, high levels of nicotine produced in genetically modified tobacco plants, smuggled into Brazil, where it was called Tobacco Loco because it made local farm workers dizzy and nauseous just by walking to the plants. Then they put them into U.S. cigarette packs illegally and distribute them to make people more addicted.
What happens if something goes drastically wrong?
Well, it almost did in a number of ways, and I'm going to give you three examples.
All right.
Two are historic, one is right now. There was a bacteria that was genetically engineered to convert cellulose and plant material into alcohol, and then it had a residue that they were going to sell all over the country as fertilizer, and they were about to do it, and the graduate student, Elaine Ingham, insisted that they test the fertilizer on regular soil, and only at that point did they realize that the bacteria was still alive and was turning the roots into alcohol. So it was going to render all this vast acreage all over the U.S. as completely infertile, and she stopped it, right? And she also found out from a person at the EPA that the EPA had done an experiment and released a genetically modified bacteria variety and then set up monitoring stations miles all around and found that the bacteria had spread. It was kind of a test for spreading bacteria. Now they find the same genetically modified bacteria around the planet. It's found everywhere. So this bodes poorly for the next example of a near-miss situation. They genetically engineered bacteria so that it caused less frost on strawberries. You see, there was a bacterium called Pseudomonas syringii. So it's called syringii because it was shaped like a syringe, and the point condensed water. And so when this bacteria was around strawberries, it would coalesce the water. The water would then have frost. It would damage the strawberries. They sprayed it on strawberries, but then the court ordered them to incinerate because they hadn't taken it into account the fact that it could also cut the frost that kills certain weeds. But later, this is very interesting, that I learned that the Pseudomonas syringii is airborne above California and is responsible for maybe 50% of the condensation of the rain that blows in, of the wet air that blows in off the Pacific. So what happened was the genetically engineered version of this bacteria did not have the pointy syringe. It was blunt, so it did not condense rain into drops. So if they had released it and if it had spread around the world, it could have permanently changed the weather patterns.
Oh, my gosh.
So these are two things that were historic that were near misses. But today I heard a talk from Don Huber. We've talked about him before. I'm with him today in Santa Rosa. And he describes this new ultra-small organism that was discovered in 2002, that if you expose it to a pregnant chicken, it kills the embryo in 24 to 48 hours. It's found in high concentrations in the feed of animals that are having infertility and miscarriages. It's found in the aborted fetal tissue in the semen samples. And he says it's affecting humans as well. He says that the infertility rate or the miscarriage rate is as high as 45% in the U.S. There is an absolute epidemic of infertility and miscarriages among livestock and also growing in humans. And so we may be facing a huge epidemic of infertility because of this organism, which seems to be promoted by Roundup, which is used on genetically modified Roundup-ready crops.
Is this the Andromeda strain all over again?
I can only say this, that this man, Don Huber, spent over 40 years in military and professional capacities evaluating man-made and natural threats, including biological warfare, again, for military intelligence. And he wrote a letter to Secretary Vilsack and said this is of a high-risk nature and it's unique. In layman's terms, it should be treated as an emergency. And he urged Secretary Vilsack not to approve Roundup-ready alfalfa, which, if Roundup was confirmed as a promoter of this organism, it would be pouring fuel on the fire. But instead of acknowledging the problem and sending in resources to evaluate, they completely ignored the Huber letter, and they approved Roundup-ready alfalfa, and they never followed up to support the research to see if this, in fact, was causing infertility and miscarriages in humans and animals.
Unbelievable, Jeff. Truly unbelievable. Let's get into your movie a little bit, Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives. How are we doing with this gamble?
Well, you know, I'll tell you one example. Okay, let's go to the big news, one of the big pieces that are revealed in the film. And by the way, people can see a trailer at geneticroulettemovie.com, Genetic Roulette Movie. I kept this piece of information hidden for a couple of years because I was trying to inspire research into it to see if I can get more information on it, but I had to release it in the film. It's time to do that. In South Africa, they eat corn as a staple three times a day, sometimes 70% of their caloric intake. Now, there was a story of a farmer in South Africa who was having serious health problems with his dairy cows and pigs, arthritic conditions, infertility, Alzheimer-type things, cannibalism.
All of them.
Really terrible stuff. And a veterinarian who's interviewed on the film says he told the guy from South Africa switch to non-GMO corn. He did. All of the problems he was experiencing disappeared, but then so did the non-GMO corn because he didn't make enough to carry through the whole year. So he had to switch to the corn that was available in the market. He brought that in. All the health problems returned. He finally was able to grow enough corn for year-round supply. The health problems disappeared. But here's the kicker. His farm workers were eating the corn grown on the farm. And so they were eating 100% genetically modified corn three times a day,
okay,
as much as 70% of their caloric intake.
Same symptoms.
Yes, they were having severe headaches, flu-like symptoms, inflammation. And what happened was that about once or twice a month, they would come up, the farmer would notice a certain symptom where the eyes wouldn't track. One would go one way and one would go the other way. He said, within 24 to 48 hours later, the person would be dead. Once or twice a month. He said he had to keep 20% extra workers on the farm because so many were sick all the time, was spending a fortune in the medicines. He had no idea why, but when he switched to non-GMO corn for his animals, the workers got better.
So, it changes almost as fast as the symptoms come up.
That's what's interesting. When I went to the offices in Chicago of Emily Lindner, who's a internist, she had told me at the American Academy of Environmental Medicine conference in 2009 that all of her patients get better when they switch to non-GMO diets, and that was about 5,000 of them since she had started to prescribe it. So I said, let me come and speak to your patients. And I spoke to someone who was on a non-GMO diet for just 25 days. By the third day, she had a 30-year bout with Crohn's disease that was gone. Another person with irritable bowel, a week and a half. A person with another irritable bowel person, 4 weeks. Migraine headaches, skin problems, weight problems, all very quickly. In fact, Dr. Lindner even said, if it's like fogginess or depression and whatnot, it's eliminated immediately. If it's asthma or allergies, it's 3 to 5 days. If it's certain gastrointestinal problems, it'll take like up to 2 or 3, 4 weeks. Sometimes people get better over 2 years. But she had it down to a science. And so when I was interviewing them, I interviewed her patients, I interviewed other patients. We started getting unsolicited comments from people all over the world about when they eat in Europe, they're healthy. When they eat in the United States, they're not. When they switch to organic, they're healthy, et cetera. People with restless leg syndrome, et cetera. But when people switch to non-GMO foods, they often have to buy organic or switch to less processed foods. And there's all sorts of cofactors that might be contributing to their improved symptoms, like the organic products, like less additives. But when we started the same month as I interviewed with Emily Lindner and her patients, we started interviewing the veterinarians and the farmers, and they're quoted. You can see them in the movie Genetic Roulette. They found that immediately when the animals switched from GM corn to non-GM corn, and there's no cofactors, they weren't switching to organic, they weren't eliminating processed foods, there was a dramatic increase. Within 2 or 3 days, there was a pig farmer in Germany, or in Denmark, where within 2 days, massive, sometimes fatal diarrhea he was struggling with for years disappeared. When in Western Iowa, within 2 or 3 days, the behavior and health improved dramatically of the 750 piglets in each nursery of 4 nurseries. So this was dramatic. And likewise, in the film, we talked to someone who his client had a hobby farm for miniature steers, and when he switched to GM corn, 90% of the steers died within 2 weeks.
Within 2 weeks?
Within 2 weeks.
Okay, as we look at all of this, with all the GMOs we continue to eat, the exposure, are there any studies, concrete studies out there, Jeffrey, about this? Or is it just, hey, you know what, if they eat the corn, they've been getting sick?
Well, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine looked at the animal feeding studies as of 2009 and determined that it was not a casual relationship between GMOs and disorders. It was a causal one. And they looked at very specifically what was happening to the animals. Now, when people reanalyzed Monsanto's own raw data for the rats that supposedly passed with flying colors after eating their genetically modified corn for 90 days, the real statistics show that there were signs of toxicity. With humans, it's even a little more scary. There was 93% of the pregnant women tested in Canada had BT toxin, which is a pesticide produced by Monsanto's genetically modified corn. It was circulating in their blood, and it was in the blood of 80% of their unborn fetuses. And in this year, in February, in the Journal of Applied Toxicology, they found that that same BT toxin, which is in our blood, can break holes in the cell walls of human cells, causing leakage. That's how it kills insects. They didn't think it had any impact on human cells. Now they know it does. So we have a toxin that breaks holes in human cells, in our diets, in our bloodstream, in our unborn fetuses, possibly in their brains because it could cross the undeveloped blood-brain barrier. And we know, here's another example, autism. Okay, we have in the film 3 different parents of autistic kids saying when they switch to non-GM foods, the autism symptoms subside.
Subside. Go away totally or just subside?
Well, it's interesting. One person told me that her kids were like her son was 80% organic and 80% recovered. And she was telling people 80% organic, 80% recovered. And then she realized, oh, my God, I'm saying the same word twice.
Yeah.
I've got to go 100%. So she went 100%, and she said now the kid is like 95% recovered or close to 100%. And it took just a few months after switching to fully organic non-GMO. Another guy said when he switched to non-GMO, the whole gastrointestinal disorders and he describes the horrible bowel movements and this thing and that thing. Now his son has, like, he calls it a neurotypical kid.
Hold on, Jeffrey. Coming back for more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of our first segment involving the GMOs with our spokesperson, Jeffrey Smith. We have a call online. I'm going to open up the call line. Area code 434, tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment. Area code 434, last number is ending in 8181. 434. Could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment?
Hello, Islam.
Islam, Mo, what's on your mind? Let me have it.
I didn't really have a question. I might stick and press the button and said I was into super.
Can hardly hear you. You're breaking up.
So I didn't really have a
I can hardly hear you, brother. I'm going into the next segment. I appreciate you calling in, though. Okay, let's go into the next segment as we continue exposing this information in regards to companies like Monsanto's and genetically modified foods. And it's very, very important that we bring this information out because we're going in grocery stores and we are picking up what we think is safe foods to eat for our family and our children and stuff. And I want to make sure that you have a clear understanding of what's out there, what to look out for, and what to examine. We're going to, later on the broadcast, he's going to be explaining what to look out for, what to look for on the label, what's good and what's not good, okay? So we're going to go on ahead.
And, you know, for the next 24 hours, you can get a free chapter of Seeds of Deception. That's Jeffrey Smith's very hot, best-selling international book. Let me tell you how you can do that. A free chapter gives you an idea to really read something on this. ResponsibleTechnology.org, that's the website, ResponsibleTechnology.org, and they will send it to you via email once you go to that website. There you go, Seeds of Deception. We'll be back in a moment more with Jeffrey Smith as we talk about GMO foods on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Jeffrey Smith with us. Jeffrey, in your opinion, how much of this stuff do we need to ingest before we start feeling sick?
It really depends on which genetically modified crop and how sensitive we are. There was a panel of some of the top allergists in the country who were asked to evaluate the threat of a genetically modified corn variety that they said had a probable chance of, a mid-probable chance of being an allergen. And they said, first of all, there's no minimum level because very, very tiny amounts can cause allergic reactions. And there was a genetically engineered food supplement called L-tryptophan produced by one company in the 1980s.
In Japan.
In Japan, right. And the Showa Denko, the company that produced it, they submitted it for the U.S. Pharmaceutical Standard, and it passed. It was 98.5% pure, and it had five or six contaminants, which the largest contamination was 0.1%. And so it was tiny amounts of contamination, and yet these contaminants turned out to be deadly. They killed about 100 Americans, caused 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick or become permanently disabled.
They used it as a sleeping aid, and it's natural in Turkey. That's why everybody passes out.
Exactly. And the thing is, it was on the market for about 4 years, and it was almost missed, and it was causing this epidemic. And the only reason it was discovered was because the symptoms had three simultaneous characteristics that were screaming to be identified. It was a new disease, it was an acute disease, and it was fast-acting. Now, if the GMO crops on the market are causing something that don't have all three characteristics, if it's producing an increase of an existing disease, no one's going to look at GMOs. If it's not acute, no one's going to look. If it's not immediate and it takes, say, the second generation to show up, we will completely miss it. And no one is monitoring the problem.
And how soon do you get better once you stop?
That's very interesting. Some doctors say it depends on the problem. I think the one person said it can take from a few days up to a couple of months, and then sometimes people continue to get better over 2 years. They took mice in an Italian study and fed them genetically modified soy for 8 months, and they had damage to their testicles, to their pancreas, and to their liver. And then they took some of the mice and switched them to a non-GM soy diet, and a lot of the problems started to go away within that month. So we're seeing pretty quick responses in laboratory animals, some enormously quick responses in livestock. So there was in my film we talk about a livestock feedlot owner who said he didn't realize it, but the more he fed genetically modified corn, the more deaths he'd have on his feedlot. Now, with that, they didn't die for 60 to 80 days. It was after that they started getting things like pneumonia and stuff.
Good point. I guess if you're buying grain, let's say, or something for your horses, if you have a little farm or something, you better check into that stuff.
Totally. And horses also eat sugar beet pulp.
And they have very sensitive guts.
Yes. In fact, there was a rash of serious health problems in racehorses right after sugar beets were genetically engineered. And I was called, and we tried to get an investigation going, but no one took the bait, so to speak. But it was interesting. One of the women that was involved in this, she was suspecting there was a change in the gut bacteria of the horses. And that's a very, very serious problem. You see, Roundup is in very high concentrations in Roundup-ready crops.
It kills the good and bad bacteria.
Exactly. Now, with botulism, there's a good bacteria keeps the botulism bacteria in check. But at very tiny concentrations of Roundup, the beneficial controlling bacteria is killed. And so it can cause a huge uprise in botulism poisoning inside the stomach of the cows, which is in very high proportions now in Europe and growing in the United States. And there's now evidence that botulism is linked to sudden infant death syndrome, and that the prevalence of Roundup now in the feed of animals may be promoting SIDS.
We've been getting lots of stories and reports of contaminated treats from China for our pets. What about these kinds of foods? I mean, I would say most pet foods are made from GMO-type foods now.
I interview in the film Genetic Roulette Dr. Michael Fox, who's called the animal doctor. He has a syndicated column to 25 to 30 million readers. And he said that when GMOs were introduced into the human food supply, the cats and dogs who eat the byproducts of the human industrial system were being exposed for the first time. And he got letters from all over the country about gastrointestinal disorders like diarrhea and inflammatory bowel disease, as well as itching and other allergic reactions. So he told his readers, take out the genetically modified corn and soy, and he's got 40 to 60 letters in a file drawer of satisfied pet owners, but others were just following the advice of their other veterinarians who were not aware of the problem, and they're putting on specialized diets. But because those specialized diets still contain the corn or soy that was genetically engineered, the animals weren't getting better.
At all.
Right.
So what do we do? What is somebody who would go to one of these big pet stores, for example, and pick up the you know, well-named brand pet foods that they expect to be good, what do they do?
Well, I haven't studied all of the brands in the pet world, but there are organic brands of pet food, and there's ways to make pet food, and there's probably pet food out there that doesn't contain soy or corn. So people have to do their own research. Now, with human food, we make it easier. We have non-GMOshoppingguide.com, and we have an iPhone application called Shop No GMO. Both are free. So Shop No GMO, you can download from iTunes. Non-GMO Shopping Guide, you can just go to the site. And there we have thousands of products that have been third-party verified as non-GMO listed in the categories that you'd shop, so baked goods, snacks, beverages, etc. It makes it much easier. Now, if you come to a product that's not in the shopping guide and you want to know if it's genetically engineered or not, if it says organic, then you know it's not intentionally genetically engineered. And if it says non-GMO on the package, then you know efforts were made to prevent contamination from GMOs. If it doesn't have organic or non-GMO on the label, then you have to read the ingredients and avoid the 9 genetically modified food crops, which are soy, corn, cotton, which is used for cotton.
And you've got this on your website.
Yeah, it's in the shopping guide. So I'll just say it so everyone hears it.
Just to remember, that's
right. Soy, corn, cottonseed oil, canola oil, sugar from sugar beets, alfalfa, which is used as hay, papaya from China or Hawaii, a little zucchini and a little crookneck squash. Those are the only ones.
What about rice? Is it there yet?
No, they've created genetically modified rice. It's contaminated the regular rice in very small quantities, but it hasn't yet been commercialized. There's a huge concern because it's a staple in Asia. People eat a lot of it, and if it's genetically engineered and it causes problems, it could cause huge problems.
Unbelievable stuff, Jeffrey. Can we win?
I think that even though GMOs are one of the hardest problems, one of the worst problems facing mankind and the environment, I think it's one of the easiest of those hard problem categories. And the reason is this, George, because with food, people can vote with their dollars, and it doesn't have to be a theoretical thing about not liking Monsanto or the way they treat farmers. It's knowing that if you eat a genetically modified corn chip, the gene that produces the BT toxin might transfer into your intestinal flora and turn it into living pesticide factories. When people realize the health dangers of GMOs that have documented and the theoretical risks as well, they don't want to expose their bodies or especially their children who are most at risk. So we think as little as 5% of U.S. shoppers avoiding GM ingredients would be sufficient to create a tipping point of consumer rejection, forcing them out of the market. And it was a tipping point of consumer rejection that kicked GMOs out of Europe in 1999. It was a tipping point of consumer rejection because of the cancer risks of milk from cows treated with bovine growth hormone, Monsanto's genetically engineered drug, that kicked that out of Walmart, Starbucks, Yoplait, Dan, and most American dairies. So, yes, George, I think not only can we win, but we're already seeing an early sign of the tipping point, many of them. And I think this whole demand for labeling is a result of the increased awareness in the collective consciousness of the U.S. population expressing the demand to avoid GMOs.
Tim Conway Jr., the son of Tim Conway Sr., the comedian, hosts a show on our affiliate in Los Angeles, KFI, right before me. And he was telling me he loves tortilla chips. And thanks God that they're not GMO foods. And I said, Tim, hold on now. Aren't most tortilla chips made out of corn?
Yes. Now, there's white corn and there's yellow corn. Now, white corn is still, it is genetically engineered, but a lower percentage. But that doesn't mean it's safe.
Okay.
Popcorn is not genetically engineered, thank heavens. But
is not?
Is not.
No popcorn on the shelves?
No popcorn. It doesn't even cross-pollinate.
Why not?
It just hasn't been a big enough commercialized product, so it hasn't been introduced by the companies. It's not like there's a magic reason. It's just that it wasn't commercially important enough to develop.
All right, so popcorn's good so far is okay.
Just don't cook it in the oils from soy, corn, cottonseed, or canola.
And then we're trapped.
Right.
That's why you use olive oil. Have they gotten to olives yet?
No, but if you buy olive oil, it might be secretly and illegally spiked with canola oil because the olive oil production, the olive oil consumption is beyond the olive oil production.
Is that why when you go to the store, you'll see a brand name olive oil for like $15, and then you'll see the store olive oil, right, like Gizmo stores, like they make their own, and it's like $2.
Well, I can't comment on Gizmo.
I'm just saying.
I know.
I don't think there is a store named Gizmo.
That's true. But I tell you this. When I go to restaurants and I avoid vegetable oils, which is soybean oil, and I avoid canola, cottonseed, and corn, if they say they use olive oil, I always say, is that pure olive oil or a blend?
Well, that's my question. The cheaper brand that I see at the store, that comes out with their own brand name, for example.
Right.
What are the odds then of that being that kind of combination?
I don't know the percentages there. I just know that it's well known in the foodie circles that, as I say, the consumption of olive oil exceeds the production, and there's a lot of canola oil imported into Italy, for example, that ends up going out in the form of blended olive oil.
What do farmers, Jeffrey, generally say about this?
That's a very good question. And I was at five farm conferences this year, and I asked the farmers, and this was not conventional GMO growers. These were more either organic or more educated farmers about some advanced technologies. And I asked them, how many of you notice that animals avoid GMOs when given a choice? And about 50 total farmers out of these five conferences raised their hands and told me stories. And I asked them how many noticed problems with animals eating GMOs or improvements when they get rid of GMOs, and there was a couple of dozen that raised their hands and shared some of the stories. But unfortunately, the lines of communication to the average GMO farmer or Midwest farmer is almost entirely controlled by the biotech industry. So the biotech industry is the seed dealer, is the chemical dealer. They control the research at the land-grant universities and how the agricultural extension agents represent it. They control the editorial section of the farm magazines and radios where they advertise. They control even the research agenda of so many academic institutions that the farmers are often completely blindsided. And this is not just in the United States. You have countries like India where independent research shows that farmers are losing income when they switch to Monsanto's cotton varieties, and yet they continue to switch because of the incredible disinformation campaign that's mounted, promising great profit and freedom by switching to these more expensive genetically engineered crops. And unfortunately, the cotton turns out to be very unreliable, and many of the farmers are borrowing from loan sharks, secondary markets, and about 200,000 farmers have committed suicide after planting Monsanto's BT cotton seeds and have been unable to pay back their loans, and so they are facing loss of their land.
And they killed themselves.
Yes.
Let's get back to this infertility again that Professor Don Huber was
right.
discussing in this path of it. At what point does it pass on to human beings, if it hasn't already?
You know, in his letter to Secretary Vilsack, he said it could cause problems to humans. In his private conversations, I've heard his concern. And today, when he was talking in Santa Rosa at a conference, I heard him twice today, he said that there's a possibility for humans. But he tends not to want to emphasize that because it's such explosive information. Fertility is such a sensitive topic. But what we are seeing, and this is remarkable, that the number of miscarriages that is happening in certain communities is so huge.
Astronomically higher than the norm in other areas, right?
Yes.
Huh. And are they able to trace this to farm communities or what?
They have traced the organism in humans, but they're not talking about it much, so I'm going to leave it there.
Tell me a little bit about Michelle Pirro again.
Dr. Michelle Pirro, she's one of the top pediatricians in America, voted consistently in that capacity, and she lives in California in the Bay Area. And I interviewed her, and what was interesting was this. She was doing a talk on GMOs and went to my book, Genetic Roulette, so both a book and a movie, and saw pictures of the intestinal walls and the stomach lining of rats that were fed genetically engineered potatoes. And she looked at it and she said to herself, uh-oh, we've got a problem. The reason is, in her practice, she sees this type of distortion and problems in the gut of children. She said that she sees kids that are allergic to every food group. She says she sees kids now that have failure to thrive. They can't gain weight. They cry constantly. Completely new categories of diseases and new severity of diseases. And when she looked at the research on GMOs, her conclusion was, this is probably the main reason why she's seeing all these problems in kids now that she wasn't seeing before.
Isn't that amazing?
And she talks about the leaky gut, too. A lot of doctors are looking at the holes in the intestines where the junctures are kind of open, and we illustrate this in the movie, that if undigested food particles get through the intestines into the bloodstream, they don't appear as food to the immune system. They appear as foreign and attackers, and so it trains the immune system to respond to the pieces of food, which can then lead to food allergies and autoimmune disease and inflammation, and some doctors say cancer and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and all sorts of things, and autism linked to leaky gut.
At this point, Jeffrey, what list is longer, the list that contains GMO foods or the list that does not?
Well, if you're talking about processed, packaged foods, generally in the center of a supermarket, I would say close to 90% have at least some processed, genetically engineered ingredient.
Oh,
now,
my.
It might be a tiny amount. It might be a little bit of dextrose or maltodextrin or soy lecithin. But unfortunately, it is pervasive. So I'm really hoping that Prop 37 passes, and people can go to our website at responsibletechnology.org and sign up for the newsletter. They can get a free chapter of Seeds of Deception, but they can also start learning about what they can do, whether they live in California or not, because they can call into California and tell people about it. They can make donations. They can tweet and Facebook and forward emails about GMOs, because right now what's about to happen is this huge disinformation campaign is going to be unleashed, and if California is able to withstand that and pass Prop 37, then the entire country will benefit.
Yeah,
the entire world
I think so. It'll be a huge story. We're going to check in on that story on that night. As a matter of fact, Jeffrey, we're going to come back with more with you on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, L.A. Marzulli joins us as we talk about his work, The Watchers. It's an incredible story about prophecy. Make sure you're part of that. We'll come back more with Jeffrey Smith on Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey, is the FDA doing much about this?
Well, unfortunately, they are on the side of Monsanto. In fact, their former attorney and vice president is the food safety czar at the FDA.
That's right.
Michael Taylor. Now, he was originally at the FDA, then he became Monsanto's outside attorney, then he became in charge of policy at the FDA when the GMO policy was created. The policy totally lied about what was going on at the FDA. We know that because documents were made public from a lawsuit years later. In Genetic Roulette, we interview the pioneer of that lawsuit, Steve Drucker, who says as he combed through the 44,000 secret internal memos at the FDA, he was shocked because he realized that the FDA had been lying for years, that the basic fundamental premise of the FDA's policy was the statement that the agency wasn't aware of any information showing that GMOs were significantly different. And on that basis, no testing was necessary, no labeling was necessary. Companies like Monsanto, who told us that PCBs, Agent Orange, and DDT were safe, can completely determine on their own whether their GMOs were safe and put it on the market without telling the FDA or consumers. But in reality, memo after memo showed that the reality within the agency was exactly the opposite, that they had warned repeatedly that GMOs were unique. They complained about the policy draft, saying, please don't claim that we have no difference between GMOs. It's like trying to force a square peg into a round hole. According to the technical experts in the agency, it's different, and it leads to different risks like allergens, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems, and all of that was ignored. So it's not just the FDA, but that's a good place to start when you look at the corruption of the government, but we can see it in other aspects of this government and other governments.
Tell us a little bit about Seeds of Deception and this neat little offer you're giving us.
Well, in Seeds of Deception, it's the world's best-selling book on GMOs because it takes people in story format about this type of underhanded capturing of FDA, et cetera. And this chapter is all about Dr. Arpad Pusztai. Now, it's the opening chapter in the book, and it's one of the more dramatic stories in the history of GMOs. And it starts out, he's at his house with his wife, and his wife answers the door, And there's several reporters standing in front of the door and others parking along the street. She says, but wait, you know we can't speak about what happened. We would be sued. But then she was immediately interrupted by a reporter from Channel 4 television, said, don't worry, your husband's been released. The gag order's been lifted, and thrusts this piece of paper in her hands. So as she's starting to read it, they all file past her and get into the living room. And then she calls her husband, who comes, and he reads it, and he realizes he could finally tell the truth. He had been unable to respond to an orchestrated campaign to destroy his reputation. He had a heart attack during those 7 months, unable to respond. He was one of the top researchers in the world in his field. He had been given a $3 million grant from the UK government to figure out how to test for the safety of GMOs. And when he discovered that GMOs were radically dangerous, causing massive damage to rats in just 10 days, he was fired from his job after 35 years, silenced with threats of a lawsuit. So the whole story, and it really puts in perspective this mechanism which has been reported in Nature, it's been reported all over the country and all over the world about this knee-jerk reaction that as soon as someone finds a problem, they're attacked. Now, for example, I was in EU Parliament, and I was giving a talk with scientists to the EU legislators. And I was there with a senior researcher, Russian Academy of Sciences, Irina Ermakova. And she had discovered that when she fed rats genetically modified soy, more than half of their babies died within 3 weeks compared to only a 10% death rate in controls. She said papers were burnt on her desk, samples stolen from her laboratory. Her boss was pressured by his boss, so she was told no more experiments on GMOs. One of her colleagues tried to comfort her by saying, well, maybe the GM soy will solve the overpopulation problem. She was not impressed. But what happened to her, what happened to Dr. Arpad Pusztai, I mean, it's not as bad as what happened to Dr. Andres Carrasco when he discovered that Roundup causes the kind of birth defects in embryos and lab animals that were being caused in the peasants who were being sprayed with Roundup in Argentina. He went to report his results in a rural area in Argentina, and an organized mob of 100 physically attacked him. He locked himself in the car, and they beat his car for 2 hours, but his friends weren't so lucky. One was knocked unconscious, the other paralyzed.
Okay, to the phones now we go, west of the Rockies, Roger in Tucson. Hey, Rog.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good, Roger.
It's nice to talk to you again. I talked to you one time before. I had the father that died under the car where the jack slipped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's been a few years.
Sure.
But I couldn't help but call in tonight, and because I've been in and out of the hospital like 30 times already since the first of the year, but I have a question for your guest.
Okay.
What it is whenever it comes to organic food and all, are these chemicals transferring over? And my wife and I are both retired, and we don't have any children, but we're buying organic food and everything, trying to eat better. But is this transferring over into what we're trying to pay more money for to get better food?
When you say transfer over, do you mean the genes transferring into us from the food?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'm just asking if the chemicals are in other words,
I got it.
Is it coming into organic food and we don't know it?
I see. Okay. So organic foods are not allowed to intentionally use GMOs, but the pollen doesn't read the signs. So sometimes there is transfer or what we call contamination, where maybe the seeds that the farmer has bought are already contaminated. Maybe he gets wind blowing from a farmer's neighbor. I was talking to Percy Schmeisser, a very famous farmer from Saskatchewan today. He gave a talk here at this conference, and his canola was contaminated by Monsanto's genetically engineered varieties of canola, and Monsanto sued him, because he has their intellectual property growing on his farm, and the Supreme Court agreed with Monsanto that it was a violation of their patent for nature to contaminate his farm. So sometimes organic, will have a small amount of GMOs, a tiny amount. In our shopping guide, we require that it be third-party verified by a non-GMO verifier, so it has to be actually tested. But even then, even with the third-party verification, if it has corn, if it has soy, it might have a tiny amount because we don't have a technology to fully prevent contamination. We don't have a technology to clean up the contamination of the gene pool. The genes already released today can outlast the decay of nuclear waste, so it can go on for hundreds of thousands of years as long as the species exists. However, we still promote organic as one of the better oases for those of us seeking non-GMO because it's essentially the best we can do if we're going to have anything with soy or corn, and it's even better if it's been third-party verified by what's called the non-GMO project, which is, as I say, requires testing.
Good point. Okay, thank you. Thanks for that. Roger, let's move now to Jean, first-time caller, Irvine, California. Jean, go ahead.
Yes. Hello, George.
Hi.
I want to ask him about rice bran oil, because recently I purchased a bag from, it's from like a health food store. I don't want to give their names, but it's like a health food store, and it says Fancy Mixed Nuts. It's a 16-ounce bag, and I bought these things because we have some squirrels out here, so I know that they like to eat these a lot, and I noticed this time around they didn't want to touch them, and they did pick up, I think, an almond or something, but I left two piles there, and they were there for days and days and days. I finally had to try to clean it up because I figured they're not going to come back, and I looked at the back of it, and it said rice bran oil, and that was the last in like the list, and I also have some white rice here at home that I cooked about a couple of days ago. So I'm kind of concerned about rice now, and also like in dried beans, could those have some GMOs as well?
Well, the good news is that rice has not been commercialized as GMO. There was a field trial of a variety of rice in 2001. That was discovered in U.S. long grain rice in 2006. And it was a small amount, and there was a huge effort to clean up because we lost our rice exports to Japan and to Europe during that time. So there may be some tiny amounts, but I don't think it's enough to worry about at this point since rice has not been commercialized as GMO. Likewise, in China, there was an effort by a rogue scientist to try and push some illegal field trials of rice into the food supply, and it showed up in rice noodles, etc., in Europe, but a small amount. So I would say rice is not a problem. You got the soy and corn are the two main problems, and then canola oil and cottonseed oil.
Where can people see your new movie, Genetic Roulette?
GeneticRouletteMovie.com has the trailer. We are going to place it up online for pay-per-view viewing, and we might even have a free showing week or a free showing period coming up, but people have to sign up for the newsletter to hear about it.
I was going to say, what's your venue? Internet? You're going to DVDs?
Right now it's on DVD, so people can order the DVDs, and they can get a discount for ordering a bunch because we really want it to get out there, especially while California is being educated about GMOs.
Do you find that schools pick this up too?
Yes, in fact, my both books, Seeds of Deception and Genetic Roulette, are being used in a variety of schools. I have them used in PhD programs and in high school, so the full range. We've already been asked by people, can we show it in schools? And they actually have started that already. I mean, it just came out at the end of August, like the last week in August, and it's already been shown in schools. We've had doctors seeing it. There was a doctor that saw it and realized this is the missing link in her practice, and she started now prescribing non-GMO diets to every one of her patients. She picked up the phone and called doctors all over the country to let them know about her findings. Another person called hundreds of people in California about Prop 37 because it completely inspired her, saying this is something we have to do immediately. So it is doing what we want, and that is it's changing people's diet, and it's getting them motivated to get on board the issue.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies, Betty's turn. Betty, hi.
Hi. I'm glad to be speaking with you again.
Super.
And I was calling about when he said you couldn't sue because of freedom of speech, Monsanto. I was just wondering how that affects, like the Humane Society and inhumanity to and cruelty to animals and even people who eat GMOs. And how can freedom of speech be above harm and death to animals and people? So why can't they sue on that basis?
That's a very good point. The point about suing is that when any state passes a labeling law, Monsanto is immediately going to try and sue to stop it in the courts. Now, there's no legal basis for stopping it, but that hasn't stopped some of Monsanto's supporters from the courts. For example, a friend of mine, George Naylor, sued Monsanto and was refused class action status, and then the New York Times reported that the judge who had made that decision was a former lawyer of record for Monsanto, and he never admitted it, and he never recused himself. Likewise, Clarence Thomas of the Supreme Court used to be a Monsanto attorney, and he did not recuse himself when voting in favor of Monsanto on another piece of court work at the Supreme Court. So it's possible that they can manipulate things. When there was a lawsuit against the FDA, there was a very twisted logic that the judge admitted that they had lied in the policy. They admitted that there was no consensus about safety, even though years of case law required consensus of safety to give something generally recognized as safe status. That's a technical term. But basically, after all that awareness, the judge just said, but we're not going to make any change. So what they can do in the courts, is it's hard to know. It's hard to predict. But in terms of cruelty to animals, yes, that is a new angle here for GMOs. We now have so much evidence, and a lot of it is in the film, about animals hurt as a result of eating GMOs and how quickly they get better when they switch to non-GMOs, that this is something we're hoping to interest the groups that are trying to prevent cruelty to animals.
What about animals in the wild?
You know, it's a great question, and we've seen deer avoiding GMOs. We've seen squirrels. There was a question earlier about rice bran oil, but we've seen squirrels, when given a choice, avoid GMOs. Geese, magpies, raccoons, elk, deer, mice, rats, chickens. So in the wild, we've seen animals avoid GMOs when given a choice, as well as in livestock situations, and it's very consistent along a lot of different species. Sometimes they have to put the non-GMO corn at the bottom of a trough and put the GM corn at the top, forcing the animal to eat through, or if they just serve the GMO, the animal will, of course, eat it. But in terms of wild animals, I do know that in Hawaii, Monsanto has a lot of test plots, and someone told me that some of the deer had horrible skin rashes and looked like disease states, but that could be just complete coincidence. But it might also be the nasty chemicals or the GMOs that they're being exposed to. So there's not enough information and there's not enough monitoring of truly wild animal effects.
Let's go to Robert in Midlothian, Illinois. Hey, Robert, thanks for calling, and you're on the air with us.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to make a comment about L-tryptophan.
Sure.
That it's been cleared since 19. It's been back in the market since 2007.
Right. Yeah, not that manufacturer, but the supplement sure has.
Yeah, but it's pharmaceutically pure, and there's no adulterants or no, you know, it's free of any yeast, corn, et cetera. It says on label.
Oh, that's good.
And it is safe to use, but it was off the market for all that, like 18, from 1989 till 2007.
Wow, that long.
And when they took it off the market, the FDA did not take it off the market out of infant formula. They didn't take it off the market out of IVs. They didn't take it off the market for pets. What happened was the FDA has an orientation to try and eliminate competitors to pharmaceutical drugs. And L-tryptophan, as you said earlier, George, was used for a sleep aid. It was used for stress. And Prozac was coming out. And so they were trying to actually, and memos reveal this, they're trying to eliminate the natural competitors. And so they had tried to take L-tryptophan off the market before and were unsuccessful. And as soon as this epidemic was discovered, they drummed up this concept that it was L-tryptophan generically that caused the problem, even though it was only one brand that caused the problem. And so I was talking to experts about this years ago, and they said if it were generically L-tryptophan that caused the problem, you'd see all of the brands causing the problem.
Right.
It's just one that was causing the problem, and that was genetically
good
engineered.
Point. We're going to come back, final hour with Jeffrey Smith, final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, this is our final hour. We'll take your phone calls. We've got Jeffrey Smith here with you. His work, of course, Genetic Roulette. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Jeffrey Smith with us. Jeffrey, we'll take final calls this hour. But what can people generally do, and what do you recommend they do?
Well, first of all, avoid GMOs, especially for children. And, you know, that's very difficult in some cases because the U.S. government WIC program gives infant formula to about 2 million moms, and all of the infant formula that they give away is genetically engineered, unfortunately. It's very sad. But definitely avoid GMOs, and then get others involved, because that's actually why we created the film Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, because, you know, I've written a couple of books, and I've done some smaller documentaries, but we wanted to put it together in one feature-length documentary where people would watch it once, and they'd get to what we call the cupboard stage, where they'd actually go and remove the GMOs from their cupboards, and they would want their loved ones and their friends to see the movie. And so this is why our institute, our nonprofit Institute for Responsible Technology, produced the video, because we think if this thing goes viral, if this thing really takes off, it'll influence enough people to cause the tipping point.
Well, that sure is. Are there other organizations that are growing, that are popping up to fight this?
Oh, yeah, more than ever before. In 2009, Supermarket News predicted that there would be an unprecedented upsurge of consumer awareness and concern starting in 2010, and that's exactly what we saw. And I have been the only one crisscrossing the United States since 2003 talking about GMOs, and I noticed a very big difference in 2010. People would come up to me after lectures and start describing the health dangers with such articulate descriptions, and they would talk about how they've gotten their fellow parents of autistic kids involved, or they've gotten their customers at their health food store, they've gotten their clients. So there were pockets of activism springing up independently around these very knowledgeable, very enthusiastic activists. And I realized this is completely new, and this is a sign of a coming tipping point, because we had in our midst a real force for change. So we've scrambled to help support that, and we've created what's called the Tipping Point Network that people can sign up for at responsibletechnology.org, where they can hook up with other people in their areas, and yes, we have thousands of people now doing this. But independent of our work, it's still popping up, because like in Connecticut, no one asked the particular legislator to introduce a labeling bill. He just did it on his own, and then we found him, and then I went and testified before the committee, and we had a press conference and stuff. So we're actually scrambling to keep up now, because it seems like the patterns are now lively in collective consciousness as people become aware, oh, GMOs are bad. And it's been supported also by a rash of media coverage starting in mid-2010 when the FDA wanted to approve salmon. And then there was a court case for alfalfa and sugar beets, and then alfalfa and sugar beets were approved in 2011. And it's become more of a household word than ever before.
Okay, back to the phones we go. We'll pick it up by going to Tim in Racine, Wisconsin. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
Good, Timmy.
Pretty good. All right, great. I got a question. You know, like the seeds you can get, like the ball banks or whatever, you know, I hear like on the power over or whatever.
Yeah.
Are those safe? And how long do they last? And I got a couple comments real quick.
What exactly was it?
The food, you know, like the for seeds, you can buy those seeds.
Oh, the seeds.
They come in like a vault, you know.
Seeds.
Seeds, yeah, seeds, regular seeds.
Okay, so when you're going to be planting seeds in a garden, there are four crops for food that you want to be concerned about. Corn.
Okay.
Zucchini.
Okay.
Yellow crookneck squash, and if
right.
you're in Hawaii, then papaya. Those are the only four seeds
that they can modify.
That they're currently commercialized. They can modify things. They want to introduce a genetically modified apple that doesn't turn brown. Crazy idea. They want to introduce everything. They want to introduce eggplant in India, but that was struck down. They want to introduce cauliflower and onions and potatoes. Actually, potatoes were introduced but kicked off the market. Tomatoes were introduced but kicked off the market. But right now, those seeds, only four for food crops.
Yeah. And also, you know, like I got a cat. And, you know, what's a good food for my cat? Then if I ever, if my cat got sick and then I'm just real disgusted what they do with our food. And if I found somebody, I'd really hurt them. I'd go to where they work.
Hey, whoa, hold on. You don't want to do that.
Yeah. Some compassion there. But, you know, I'm not an expert at pet foods. If you go to the Price-Pottinger Foundation, they did some very interesting experiments with raw cat food instead of cooked cat food, but that's their expertise. My expertise is basically going to drive you to non-genetically engineered ingredients. So if you look at the cat food and it says corn or soy, then it's got to be organic or it's got to say non-GMO in order for it, in my opinion, to be safe. So that's where I'd go. The same kind of things when you go to the shopping guide, nongmoshoppingguide.com, there's a pet food section there, but also it describes what are the at-risk ingredients to avoid.
It tells you, though, the means that some people will take because they're upset about this.
I know. I was sad to hear about him wanting to hurt someone. But, you know, one thing is this. When you learn about the dangers of genetically engineered foods, sometimes you just get frustrated and angry. And I tell people, you know, don't take it out on the waiter or the waitress. Don't take it out on the people just don't know. You know, if they serve canola oil, it's not, you know, they don't know that it's genetically engineered. They think it's a healthy oil. They serve soybean oil because everyone's using it. So, and it's frustrating because people realize they have to give up the foods that they're ordering in restaurants. They have to give up some of their favorite brands. And it's something that you have to sort of develop a level of compassion. And you can basically have to do what you can do. Not everyone has control of their diets. People, you know, sometimes are on a meal plan, or some people are in prison where they have a ton of genetically modified soy. And I testified at one press conference where a guy said he was having horrible reactions to the genetically engineered soy, but couldn't get the prison system in Illinois to give him non-soy-based food. So you have to do what you can do.
Yeah, you sure do. Okay, we go next to Nick in Roseburg, Oregon. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, you know, I'm going to try to be articulate in a short time. I always worry about the root cause of the problem. I have adult foster homes where I take people out of the nursing homes that are sickly or not doing well, haven't recovered, and I bring them into my place. After 25 years of experience, I always worry about the GMOs getting blamed for this, and they don't get down to the root cause of the problem. The root cause of the problem is gluten. Gluten would cause the root cause of the problem, which will create more sensitivities to the GMOs. This is the lesions, the Crohn's, the ulcerative colitis, which create Berber, and you get villous atrophy, which allows the large particle foods that are not broken down into peptides, tripeptides, and then amino acids. That's when the reaction starts coming into play, not necessarily the GMO foods. Gluten is the root cause of the problem. All we do is we get our residents off of gluten, on a gluten-free diet, wheat, barley, rye, oats. We see if they're sensitive to cross-contamination, which is corn. Corn is usually the cross-contamination that looks a lot like the wheat, barley, rye, and oats. And in 60 to 90 days, they're doing much better, and some of them move out. It's not the GMO foods. The GMO foods are the problem if they're already born gluten intolerant. I've gotten the kids off autism, wheat, barley, rye, oats. You start healing your intestinal villi with the amino acids and their vitamins and the minerals, and they start doing better, and they don't need schooling anymore. But the root cause of the problem is they need to get tested by Cyrex Labs or somebody like that for gluten intolerance. And I, you know, 25 years I've been doing this, and that's the only thing that I do. And we are highly rated. I never have an empty room. We have a waiting list because people always do better when they get that, especially when they're over 55 years of age. You get them on a gluten-free diet. And then after a year or 2 years, they can start having dairy. They can start having corn again if that's not a cross-contamination problem for them.
All right, let's get Jeffrey's reaction to that. What do you think? I think he's got something.
Here's what I pick up from healthcare practitioners. In some cases, they don't find that people are gluten-sensitive, but they're GMO-sensitive. And the reduction of GMOs and the elimination of GMOs has a big impact. And they're not taking gluten out of the diet. In some cases, like in the cases of autistic kids, they'll go to a gluten-free and casein-free diet, and they'll still end up having lots of symptoms and reactions, and when they switch to non-GMO organic, the remaining symptoms go away, even though there was a big step up during the gluten-free, casein-free stage. It sort of finished off with a big increase. Now, many people think that there's the increase in gluten intolerance is not just better detection, but there actually is an increase in gluten intolerance, and that could be related to GMOs, because if GMOs, like the BT toxin, is drilling holes in the intestinal walls, changing the structure of the intestinal villi, causing a higher degree of overall immune system reaction, messing up the gut bacteria, causing kind of gut dysbiosis. These are things that could affect the way the body reacts to a host of.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we come to the end of this broadcast, and I have been your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay. We're going to be posting this in the next 20 minutes, so I appreciate you tuning in, and stay tuned for our next broadcast. And don't forget, in order to access my library, just give me a call at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll get you in there. Okay?
I'm never meant to hurt you. Must have been.